13-story treehouse, written by Andy Griffiths and read by Stig Weems. Chapter 1, The 13-Story Treehouse. Hi, my name is Andy. This is my friend Terry.
Hi, I'm Terry. I've got a pencil.
We live in a tree. Well, when I say tree, I mean treehouse. And when I say treehouse, I don't mean any old treehouse. I mean a 13-story treehouse. So what are you waiting for? Come on up. It's got a bowling alley.
Terry, that's my head!
Oops, sorry.
A see-through swimming pool.
Help!
Who said that?
A tank full of man-eating sharks.
Look out, Terry! Behind you!
Shh! Don't interrupt me. I'm trying to feed the sharks.
Vines you can swing on.
I don't think that's a vine, Andy. I think that's a snake.
A games room?
I'm bored.
Are you kidding?
Yes.
A secret underground laboratory?
I just worked out how to make giant bananas.
Why?
Because giant bananas are cool.
A lemonade fountain. A vegetable vaporizer.
Oh no! A Brussels sprout!
Vaporize, vaporize, vaporize.
Brussels sprout, kaputski.
And a marshmallow machine that follows you around and automatically shoots marshmallows into your mouth whenever you're hungry.
How do you turn this stupid thing off?
But I'm
not full yet.
As well as being our home, the treehouse is also where we make books together. I write the words and Terry draws the pictures.
Right, wow, Andy, look at the pile of books we've already made. The cat on the mat is flat, the cow that went kapow. Just tricking, just annoying, just crazy, just disgusting, just stupid, just shocking. The bad book, the very bad book, just Macbeth. What bummer is that? What body part is that?
As you can hear, we've been doing this for quite a while now. Chapter 2, The Flying Cat. If you're like most of our listeners, you're probably wondering where we get all the ideas for our books from. Well, sometimes we think them up. Other times they are based on stuff that actually happens. Like this book, for instance. It all started one morning when I got up and went down to get some breakfast.
Whee! Oh! Morning, Andy.
Morning, Terry. Terry was already in the kitchen. He was painting a cat. And when I say painting a cat, I don't mean he was painting a picture of a cat. He was painting an actual cat. Bright yellow. This might be a stupid question, Terry, I said. But why are you painting that cat bright yellow?
Because I'm turning it into a canary,
he said. I started to explain to Terry that you can't turn a cat into a canary just by painting it yellow. But he said,
"Yes, you can. Watch this."
and he carried the dripping cat to the edge of the deck.
No!
I yelled as Terry held the cat out in midair and let it go. But I needn't have worried. The cat didn't fall. Two little wings popped out of its back, and then it tweeted and flew away.
See?
Said Terry, turning to me in triumph.
I told you so. I told you she wanted to be a canary.
Look, Mum, there's your flying cat.
Now, don't be silly, Peepy.
Is it a cat?
Is it a canary?
Is it a canary?
I love catenaries. I just love my new hairstyle. Chapter 3. The Missing Cat. We watched the cat. I mean, canary. Actually, I think I mean catenary. Until it flew out of sight. Then the doorbell rang. It was Jill, our neighbour. She lives on the other side of the forest in a house full of animals. She's got two dogs, a goat, three horses, four goldfish, one cow, six rabbits, two guinea pigs, one camel, one donkey, and one cat.
Uh-oh, said Terry. She's probably looking for her cat.
Don't tell me that was Silky you just turned into a canary, I said.
Okay, I won't, said Terry. But it was.
This was bad. Jill loved that cat. She loved all her animals, but she especially loved Silky.
Oh, no, I said. She's going to be really mad when she finds out what you've done.
Maybe we shouldn't tell her.
Good idea, I said. Let's pretend we're not home. We did our best to lay low, but it's pretty hard to hide in a treehouse.
It's no use hiding, called Jill. I can hear you. And I can see you. Silky's gone missing, and I was wondering if you'd seen her.
No,
I said quickly.
She's not here.
Now, before you start thinking I'm the kind of person who would tell a lie, I'd just like to point out that although the first part of my sentence, no, was technically a lie, the second part, she's not here, was definitely the truth, which, I'm sure you will agree, cancels out the lie.
Oh, said Jill sadly. Well, anyway, I've made up a missing cat poster. Can I put one on your tree?
Sure, I said. It's the least we can do. Which was also definitely 100% true. The cat poster said, Missing cat, Silky. She looks like this. And it had a picture of Silky, with cute little ears and darling whiskers and very soft white fur and beautiful green eyes. And it had her likes, cat food, cuddles, cats on TV. And her dislikes, dogs, water, fleas, locked cat flaps. And it said, Big reward, call Jill. As soon as Jill left, I turned to Terry. We've got to find that cat, I said.
You mean canary,
said Terry. Whatever, I said. We've got to find her. But before we could even begin looking for her, the video phone rang. Yes, we've got one of those as well. And it's 3D.
Maybe that's Silky now, said Terry.
Don't be stupid, I said. Cats can't use phones.
Maybe they can, said Terry. You said they couldn't turn into canaries, and you were wrong about that.
If cats could make phone calls!
G'day, Pizza Haven.
Four fish pizzas, please, with extra fish.
Chapter 4. The Big Red Nose. We raced back upstairs. A big red nose filled the video phone screen. Uh-oh. It was Mr. Big Nose, our publisher, and he was angry. I could tell this because his nose was even bigger and redder than usual.
Where's my book?
He yelled.
What book?
Said Terry.
The one you chuckleheads promised me a year ago would be on my desk last Friday.
Oh, said Terry. Is it last Friday already?
It's past last Friday already,
shouted Mr. Big Nose.
Way past, and your book is still not on my desk.
The truth was, we'd kind of forgotten about the book. We were a little behind schedule. Well, when I say a little behind schedule, I mean a lot behind schedule. And when I say a lot behind schedule, I mean a lot behind schedule. Not that I was about to let Mr. Big Nose know that. He was already pretty angry, and the angrier he gets, the bigger his nose gets. And if his nose got any bigger, I was worried that it might explode. And that was not something I wanted to see, especially not in 3D.
And here now is a sound engineer's impression of what it would sound like if Mr. Big Nose's nose exploded.
No problem, Mr. Big Nose. I lied. It's under control. We'll get to it as soon as we can.
Well, as soon as you can had better be by 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, or else.
Don't worry, Mr. Big Nose, I said. It'll be there all right. You can count on us.
But,
said Terry. I quickly ended the call before Terry could say anything that would make Mr. Big Nose any angrier than he already was.
You shouldn't have told him that,
said Terry.
I'm way too busy to get it done by tomorrow. Look at my to-do list. I'm flat out.
Terry's to-do list. Do have a pillow fight with Andy. Do prepare birthday party for sharks. Do practice golf swing. Do eat at least 100 marshmallows. Do polish the parrot. Do cut toenails. Do hit Andy with bowling ball. Do eat all the chocolates in the treehouse. Do tickle the parrot. Do sleep on the roof. Do go to the toilet. Do go to the toilet. And don't even get me started on my to-don't list. Terry's to-don't list. Don't fall out of the treehouse. Don't fall into man-eating shark tank. Don't make Andy cry. Don't eat the man-eating sharks. Don't set fire to my head. Don't wash. Don't stand under falling piano. Don't wash my undies. Don't wash Andy's undies.
Don't wash anything. Don't do anything.
Your to-dos and to-don'ts will just have to wait, I said. If we don't get this book finished, it will be back to the monkey house for us.
The monkey house?
Said Terry, looking terrified.
Not the monkey house. Anything but the monkey house.
For those of you who don't know, the monkey house is where Terry and I used to work. It was the worst job ever. Cleaning the monkey house was bad enough.
I hate monkey poo.
Shut up and sweep. Grooming the monkeys was even worse.
I hate nits.
Shut up and groom. But the worst job of all was having to fill in for the monkeys while they were on a break.
I hate bananas. Shut up and eat.
Mummy, those two don't look like real monkeys.
Shh, don't talk so loud. You'll hurt their feelings.
I'm not going back to the monkey house, said Terry. And that's final.
And you won't have to, I said. Not if we get our book finished. Come on, let's get started. We've only got until tomorrow. Chapter 5. The Drawing Competition. We went to the kitchen table. It's where we do most of our work. Or rather, in the case of the past year, it's where we didn't do most of our work. But that could soon be fixed. I figured Terry would have a few funny sketches in his drawing folder to get us started. It would simply be a matter of grabbing the best ones, adding a few words, and hey presto, we'd have our new book. No sweat, no worry. We are professional book writers, after all. I mean, I've already mentioned the pile of books we've already written back in chapter one.
Yeah, there was the cat on the mat, the cow that went kapow, just tricking, just annoying, just...
Terry, we haven't got time for you to mention every book we've already written again.
So you don't want me to mention the bad book or the very bad book or what...
Would you shut up? Okay, I said, let's see what you've got. Terry opened his drawing folder and laid it flat on the table.
You're going to love this, he said.
In front of me was a picture of a finger.
This is just a picture of a finger, I said.
Yes, said Terry proudly. But it's not just any finger. It's my finger.
Uh-huh, I said. What else have you got?
I've got a close-up picture of my finger, said Terry. And it's labelled.
I stared at it. It had fingernails, fingerprints, dirt and killer germs, broken bits from chewing his fingernails, mountain-climbing lice.
Well,
said Terry, a big grin on his face.
What do you think? Lice picks, get it? Not ice picks, lice picks.
Yeah, I get it, I said. I turned the pages, looking for more pictures, but all I saw was a blank page, and another blank page, and another blank page.
Is that it? I said. Two pictures? You've had a whole year and you've only come up with two pictures? Honestly, Terry, do you expect me to do all the work, the pictures as well as the writing?
Of course not, said Terry. You can't draw.
Yes, I can, I said. Drawing is easy. It's coming up with the words that takes real skill.
If you think drawing is so easy, then let's have a competition, said Terry, handing me a pencil.
No problem, I said. First, we drew a knife.
That's not a knife, said Terry. This is a knife.
Next, we drew a worm.
That's not a worm, said Terry. This is a worm. Wow, my picture is so good the bird thinks it's real.
Next, we drew a banana.
That's not a banana, said Terry. This is a banana. Wow, my picture is so good it even tastes like a banana.
No, I said, that's not a banana. This is a banana. I picked up the giant banana that Terry had made the day before and charged at him.
Put the giant banana down, Andy, said Terry, backing away.
I'll put it down, I said, when you admit that I'm a better drawer than you are.
But you're not.
Okay, I said. Then I'm sorry to inform you that I'm going to have to whack you over the head with this giant banana.
Not if I whack you first, said Terry, snatching the banana from my hands and whacking me over the head with it.
That's when everything went black. The next thing I knew, I was soaking wet and Terry was kneeling in front of me holding an empty bucket.
I'm so glad you're all right, he said. I thought I'd killed you.
So did I said. I can't believe you whacked me with a giant banana.
But you were going to whack me with it.
Two wrongs don't make a right, Terry, I reminded him.
I suppose not,
he said.
And I'm sorry, but look on the bright side. At least I saved your life by throwing a bucket of water in your face.
But now I'm all wet.
Yes, but at least it's better than being dead.
I'll tell you one thing, I said. We're both as good as dead if we don't stop wasting time and get our book finished.
You mean, get our book started,
said Terry.
Do you have anything in your writing folder?
Actually, I do have the start of a story, I said. And it's a pretty good one, too.
That's great, said Terry. Let's see it.
I grabbed my writing book and began turning the pages. Page one, once. Page two, a pom. Page three, a. Page four, time.
Great start, said Terry. Action-packed. But what happens next?
I'm not sure, I said. That's as far as I got.
That's it, said Terry. Four words?
Four pages, I said.
Yeah, but it's still only four words, said Terry. And one of them isn't even spelt right. I'm pretty sure it's upon, not upom.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Roald Dahl, I said. If you know so much about story writing, why don't you write it?
Because it's time for my favourite TV show, said Terry.
What about our book? I said.
Why don't you write while I watch?
Because I can't write when the TV is on, I said. I can't concentrate.
Then come and watch it with me,
said Terry, patting the beanbag beside him. And that's why, instead of working on our book, we ended up wasting half an hour watching the world's dumbest dog on the world's dumbest TV show. But don't just take my word for it. Listen for yourself. Chapter 6.
The Barky the Barking Dog Show. This week's episode, Barky and the Big Hole, starring Barky the Barking Dog.
Bark!
Barky is outside and discovers a small bird.
Bark! Bark! Bark, bark! 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 Bark, bark! Bark, bark, bark!
The bird flies away. Barky discovers a flower.
Bark! Bark, bark! Bark, bark, bark! Bark, bark!
The sun dries the flower out and it dies. Barky turns to the sun.
Bark! Bark, bark! Bark! Bark, 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 bark! Bark! Bark, bark, bark! Bark!
The sun slowly goes down. And it is nighttime.
Bark! Bark! Bark, bark, bark! 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 Bark, 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 bark! Bark!
The sun comes back up again.
Bark! Bark, bark!
Barky discovers a tree. Discovers a small bee.
Bark! Bark, bark! Bark, 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 bark!
The bee disappears down a hole.
Bark! Bark, 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 bark!
Barky pokes his nose into the hole.
Bark! Bark! Bark, 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 bark!
Barky falls into the hole.
Bark! Bark! Bark!
Chapter 7, The Monster Mermaid. See what I mean? TV shows don't get much dumber than that. Okay, Terry, I said when it was finally over, let's get back to work.
But it's time for my second favourite show, said Terry. Buzzy the Buzzing Fly.
Buzzy the Buzzing Fly, starring Buzzy the Buzzy Fly.
Buzz, 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 buzz.
Oh, no, it's not, I said, grabbing the remote and turning off the TV.
Oh, yes, it is,
said Terry, snatching the remote out of my hand and turning it back on. Actually, I think you'll find that it's not, I said, picking up the TV and throwing it out of the treehouse. It landed with a crash on the ground below. Terry shrugged.
I guess you're right, he said.
Hey!
Yelled a voice.
That almost landed on my head!
Oops. I peeped over the edge. It was Bill, the postman.
Sorry, Bill,
I said.
It was an accident. That's all right,
said Bill, chuckling.
Delivering mail to the 13-storey treehouse is always an adventure. Is young Terry there? I've got a parcel for him. Special delivery.
Yay, said Terry, sprinting for the ladder. I'll be right down.
He returned a few minutes later with a package.
My sea monkeys!
He yelled as he opened it.
They've arrived at last!
Sea monkeys? I said. What do you want them for? We've already got a perfectly good tank full of man-eating sharks.
But sea monkeys are much better than man-eating sharks, said Terry. Sea monkeys have three eyes. They breathe through their feet and they build vast underwater kingdoms. Sharks can't do any of that. Sharks don't even have feet. I'm going to make my sea monkeys come alive right now.
Not so fast, I said. We've got a book to write, remember?
I know, said Terry, and I promise I'll get to work right after I've hatched the sea monkeys.
They come to life instantly.
All I have to do is add water. Please, please, please.
Okay, I said. But hurry.
Sure thing, said Terry, rushing to the elevator. I'll be right back.
I waited for a long time. And then a really long time. And then a really, really long time. But he didn't come back. Eventually, I found him down in the secret underground laboratory.
What are you doing?
I said. I thought you were supposed to be adding water to the eggs.
I am, said Terry. I've just finished making the apparatus that will help me measure the exact amount of water I need. Too much, and the sea monkeys could drown.
Too little, and they could suffocate. But you said hatching the eggs would be instant,
I said.
And it will be,
said Terry,
just as soon as I add the water. Now, stand back.
He pushed a button and the water dripped out of the machine.
Drop. By painfully slow drop.
by even more painfully slow drop. Finally, about 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
At last, I said. Add the eggs, quick, and let's get back to work.
Sure,
said Terry.
I just have to purify the water.
How long will that take? I said. Terry looked at the packet.
24 hours.
What? I said. But that's a whole day.
Don't be silly, Andy,
said Terry, laughing.
There aren't 24 hours in a day.
Yes, there are, I shouted. And if you think I'm going to let you waste any more time on these stupid sea monkeys, then you're out of your tiny pea-brained, numbskull-sized mind.
Brains, a simple guide.
Terry, large pea-sized brain. Bird, sesame seed-sized brain. A gnat, grain of sand-sized brain. Andy, atom-sized brain.
These descriptions are not to scale.
What's your language, Andy?
Said Terry.
There might be children listening.
I don't care who is listening, I said. Put your sea monkey eggs in that water right now, or else I swear I'll shove that jar onto your head so hard that it'll be stuck there for the rest of your life. How would you like that?
Terry thought about it for a moment.
What would it be like to live the rest of my life with a jar on my head? Brushing my teeth would be difficult. Eating dinner would be difficult. Hairstyling, well, that would be difficult. Picking my nose would be difficult. Getting married, well, that would be okay. Except when it came to kissing the bride, that would be difficult. Getting old, well, getting old with a jar in my head, that would be difficult. Getting very, very old, stupid jar. Finally dying with a jar in my head. Difficult. I don't think I'd like it at all,
he said finally.
I guess, under the circumstances, we can skip the water purifying step and add the eggs straight away.
Great thinking, I said.
Terry's hand was trembling as he poured the sea monkey eggs into the jar. He stirred it and held it up to the light.
I've done it! He shouted. I'm a genius! I've created life!
He was right. Not about being a genius, of course, but there was definitely a bunch of newly hatched sea monkeys bobbing around in the jar.
Well, that's just great, I said. Now, can we get back to our book?
Not yet, said Terry. I have to feed them one level scoop of official sea monkey growth food.
I groaned. Does that mean that now you have to build a one level scoop of official sea monkey growth food dispensing machine?
No need for that. They come with their own official sea monkey growth food dispensing utensil,
said Terry as he sprinkled sea monkey growth food from a plastic spoon into the top of the jar. The food triggered a feeding frenzy. Well, in one sea monkey at least. It swam straight to it and sucked it all up before the others could get any.
What a guts, said Terry. Better put some more in, I said.
Terry measured out another spoonful and sprinkled it into the jar. Once again, the greedy sea monkey ate it all. And then
it started to grow. Within seconds, it doubled in size and then doubled in size again. Then it swam around the jar and ate all the other sea monkeys. It grew bigger and bigger and bigger. It's getting too big for the jar, said Terry. Get a beaker, I said. A really big beaker. Terry darted away and returned with the biggest beaker we had.
That ought to hold it,
he said as he tipped the sea monkey from the jar into its new home. But the sea monkey kept right on growing. Soon it was too big for the beaker, so we tipped it into a bucket. But it quickly outgrew that as well.
It's no use, said Terry. We need something even bigger.
How about the bath? I said.
I didn't know we had a bath, said Terry.
Yes, I said. I've been meaning to talk to you about that. It's in the bathroom.
I didn't know we had a bathroom, said Terry.
Just bring the bucket and follow me, I said. We sprinted to the elevator.
We rode the elevator to the bathroom floor.
We sprinted out of the elevator and into the bathroom. We threw the sea monkey into the bath. Ugh, that is one weird-looking sea monkey, I said when we'd finally got it into the bath.
That's because I'm not a sea monkey,
said the weird-looking sea monkey.
I am a mermaid.
A mermaid?
Said Terry, looking like he was about to cry.
But mermaids are for girls. I ordered sea monkeys.
It's not my fault,
said the mermaid.
The eggs must have got mixed up at the factory. My name is Mermaidia. What's yours?
Terry, he said.
That's a nice name for a merman,
said Mermaidia.
I'm not a merman, said Terry.
Oh, I thought you were,
said Mermaidia, gazing at Terry.
You're certainly good-looking enough to be one.
Terry blushed and giggled. Hello, I said. I'm Andy.
Uh-huh,
said Mermaidia, not taking her eyes off Terry. I live here too, I said.
Uh-huh,
said Mermaidia.
Why don't you run along now, Sandy? Terry and I would like to be alone.
Yes,
said Terry dreamily.
But what about our book?
I said. When are we going to do that? But it was no use. Neither of them were listening to me. They were just gazing into each other's eyes. It was quite embarrassing, actually. I stepped out of the room and closed the door. The thing was, though, I could still hear what they were saying.
You are so sweet,
said Mermaidia.
I wish I could stay here with you.
But you can, can't you?
Said Terry.
Alas, no,
said Mermaidia.
I can't live in a bathtub forever.
We've got a swimming pool,
said Terry.
It's see-through. You could live there.
But I need to live in the sea,
said Mermaidia.
It's where I belong.
Oh, said Terry sadly.
I know, said Mermaidia. Why don't you come to live with me? We could live in my 13-story sandcastle under the sea.
That would be nice, said Terry. But I'm not a merman. I can't breathe underwater.
There is a way, though,
said Mermaidia.
When a human and a mermaid get married, the human becomes a merman. And all we have to do to be married is kiss. I should have rushed in and broken it up right then and there. But I didn't want them to know I'd been listening. And besides, I was too late anyway. I shuddered as I heard the unmistakable sound of a human and a mermaid kissing.
Oh, darling,
crooned Mermaidia.
I'm so happy. Let's leave right away.
Okay, said Terry. I've just got to say goodbye to Andy.
All right, but hurry,
sighed Mermaidia impatiently.
I don't know how much longer I can last in this bathwater.
I quickly hid as Terry came out of the bathroom. He climbed down the ladder and started looking for me.
Andy!
He called.
I need to talk to you.
I was about to go down and join him when I heard a strange gurgling sound coming from the bathroom. It sounded like Mermaidia was choking and, even though I didn't especially like her, I thought I should still see if she was all right. But as I entered the bathroom, I caught sight of her reflection in the mirror, and what I saw was definitely not all right. In fact, it was definitely all wrong. Very, very wrong. Mermaidia wasn't Mermaidia anymore. She was a sea monster. How could I be so sure that she was a sea monster? Well, for a start, there was her slimy sea monstery skin, and her slimy sea monstery tentacles, and her slimy sea monstery stench. But above all, I think it was the fact that she was saying, "Perfume mirror on the wall. Who's the sneakiest sea monster of all?" That really clinched it for me. You know when you see something so horrible that you want to look away but you can't? Well, this was so horrible that I had to get out my flip camera and record it.
"Bathroom mirror on the wall. Who's the sneakiest sea monster of all? The human does not suspect a thing. He's such a stupid ding-a-ling. He thinks that he will live with me in a palace of sand beneath the sea. He does not know this will not be. Instead, he will be dinner for me. I'll lure him down beneath the water. And then his body I will slaughter. Oh, how I'll enjoy devouring him. I'll tear him apart limb from limb. I'll eat his eyes and ears and nose and suck the marrow from his toes. I'll crush his puny pea-brained head and grind his bones to make my bread. My trap is set. My plans are laid. All I must do is keep up
the charade."
"Who, me? A sea monster?
Your brain needs first aid. I'm a lovely, innocent, sweet mermaid."
And with that, the monster became Mermaidia again and climbed back into the bathtub. I stopped recording and rushed off to find Terry. He was down in the kitchen. The marshmallow dispenser was shooting marshmallows into his mouth just as fast as he could swallow them.
"Guess what, Andy?"
he mumbled with his mouth full. Let me see. You and Mermaidia got married and you're off to live in an underwater 13-story sandcastle?" Terry was amazed.
"How did you know?"
"I heard the whole thing," I said, "and that's not all I heard. After you left, I discovered that Mermaidia is not a mermaid at all. She's a sea monster."
"That's a lie," said Terry. "You're just jealous."
"No, I'm not," I said. "Look at this." I pressed play on my camera and handed it to him.
"Yikes,"
said Terry.
"What am I going to do?"
"Well, for a start," I said, "I think you should definitely break up with her.
And pretty soon, too.
Of course I will, said Terry. But what if she tries to eat me?
Calm down, I said. I was just joking. For the moment, there's no need to do anything. She doesn't know that you know that she's a sea monster.
Oh, yes, I do, said a hideous, gurgling voice behind us.
We turned to see Mermaidia sliming her way across the kitchen towards us.
Go away,
said Terry, trying to hide behind me.
But we're married, my darling,
she said, extending her horrible face towards Terry.
Don't kiss me,
he pleaded, his eyes wide in alarm.
I'm not going to kiss you,
she said.
I'm going to eat you and your eavesdropping friend.
But I didn't mean to eavesdrop, I said. Can't you just let me off with a warning? Or a small fine or something?
I suppose I could, said Mermaidia. It's just that I'm so very hungry. Being cooped up in a sea monkey packet for so long gives one such an appetite.
We backed away from Mermaidia until we were pressed up against the elevator doors. I felt around behind me, desperately trying to find the button to open the door as she slimed closer and closer. Finally, I found it. The doors slid open and we tumbled backwards into the elevator. Mermaidia roared as the doors slid shut.
Phew, said Terry. I'm glad that's over.
Are you kidding? I said as we descended towards the laboratory. That was only round one.
So what are we going to do now?
Well, I said, this might be a dumb question, but can the banana enlarger work in reverse?
You mean as a banana shrinker?
Said Terry.
Sure. It's simply a matter of reversing the polarity. But how are shrunken bananas going to help us fight a sea monster?
They're not, I explained as the elevator doors opened into the lab. And we're not going to fight a sea monster. We're going to shrink it. But you're going to have to work fast. Your wife will be here any second.
Don't remind me,
said Terry, making a dash for the enlarger. I listened as the elevator rose through the trunk back to the main level. Mermaidia had obviously summoned it and would be here any moment.
One sea monster shrinker ready for action, said Terry.
Just in time, I said. I stood as close to the elevator as I dared. The doors slid open and Mermaidia oozed into the room.
Ah, there you are, she gurgled. I can't believe you really thought you were going to get away from me. You humans are so stupid.
And you're nothing but an overgrown sea monkey, I taunted as I backed across the lab towards the shrinker, hoping she would follow.
I am not a sea monkey,
she shrieked as she slimed her way towards me.
I'm a sea monster! And just for that, I'm going to eat you first. Oh, no, you're not, I said. Oh, yes, I am,
she said as she touched the tip of my nose with one of her stinking black tentacles. No, you're really not, I shouted, jumping clear. Now, Terry! Terry fired up the shrinker and blasted her with the ray. Mermaidia screamed in rage as she began to shrink before our eyes.
I'm shrinking!
She screamed as she grew smaller and smaller.
I'm shrinking! 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 Shrinking!
Soon she was no larger and no more dangerous than a jelly bean. She lay on the floor between us, ranting in a tiny, high voice.
she was the worst sea monkey ever,
said Terry.
I've got a good mind to send her back to the factory.
We're going to send her back, all right, I said. But not to the factory. Back to the sea, where she belongs. In fact, I'm going to do it right now. Unless you'd prefer to.
No, I don't think I can,
said Terry. Fine, I said. I picked her up with a pair of tweezers, dropped her into the toilet, and pushed full flush. Twice. I wasn't taking any chances. When I came out, Terry was wiping away a tear. I can only guess how sad you must feel, I said, putting my arm around him. But try to look on the bright side.
What bright side?
Now we can get on with our book. Chapter 8, The Big Bubble. We took the elevator up to the main deck and sat down at the table. Okay, I said. Where were we up to? Oh, that's right. Once upon a time. Now, let me see. Once upon a time, there was help me out here, Terry. Once upon a time, there was a... what? Whatever, sighed Terry. I don't care. I can't work. I'm too sad. I know Mermaidia was a sea monster, but I really liked her when she was a mermaid. How about a marshmallow? I said. Would that help? I'll call the machine over.
Nah, said Terry. I'm tired of marshmallows.
Maybe you just need a change, I said. How about some popcorn? Terry shrugged. We can pop it with the lid off, I said. Terry shrugged again. Okay. I filled the popcorn maker up and turned it on. We waited. And waited. And waited. And just when we thought it was never going to pop, suddenly, it did! We ran around and caught as much of it in our mouths as we could until we couldn't eat anymore.
That was a great idea, Andy, said Terry.
But now I'm really thirsty. Some lemonade'll fix that, I said. I'll start the fountain. Did I mention that we have a lemonade fountain? Well, we do. It's just like a regular fountain, but instead of water, it has lemonade. Any flavour you want, as long as it's red, orange, lemon, cola or tutti frutti, which is all the flavours mixed together. We sat in the lemonade fountain for a long time. And when I say a long time, I mean probably a lot longer than we really should have. Oops. Excuse me, said Terry, covering his mouth with his hand. But before I could excuse him, I burped even louder. No, excuse me, I said. Terry burped again, even louder this time.
Uh-oh.
Well, you certainly sound like you're feeling better, I said.
Much better, said Terry. All I need now is some bubble gum.
He climbed out of the lemonade fountain, went over to the bubble gum dispenser, reeled off a long strip and shoved it all into his mouth.
That's good,
Terry mumbled as he chewed.
Hey, I've got a great idea, Andy. Watch this.
Terry chewed and burped. And burped and chewed.
Uh-oh.
And blew and burped. And burped and blew. Until he had blown the biggest bubble I had ever seen. The bubble was so big that I couldn't even see Terry anymore. "That's enough," I said. "It's getting too big." But Terry couldn't hear me. And the reason for that was because the bubble had become so big that it had completely surrounded him. He was inside his own burp gas-filled bubblegum bubble.
"Hey, this is really fun," said Terry as he floated around in his bubble.
"Be careful," I said.
"What could possibly go wrong?"
he said. And then he began to float higher and higher up into the air.
"Help!"
he cried.
"Don't worry,"
I called to him as he floated up, up and away from the treehouse.
"I'll save you!"
I took a running jump at the closest vine and swung out as far as I could to try and catch the bubble. It was a good swing, but not quite good enough. My hand closed on thin air and Terry continued to float away, higher and higher into the sky. There was only one thing to do. I grabbed my golf clubs and raced up to the observation deck. I figured now would be a great time to work on my golf swing and, of course, to try and pop Terry's bubble at the same time. I gave it my best shot, but I didn't have any luck on my first attempt. I hit a helicopter.
Four!
Oops. Or on my second.
Four!
I ricocheted off the city skyline. Or even on my third. I smashed the windscreen of a flying saucer. Sorry. But my fourth attempt was a bullseye. The bubble burst, which was both good and bad. Good, because Terry was no longer trapped in a bubble full of burp gas, but bad, because now he was plummeting towards the ground without a parachute, or even a crash helmet. Luckily, however, the marshmallow machine seemed to know just what to do. It began firing marshmallows at supersonic speed, and within moments, there was a giant pillow of marshmallows on the ground directly below Terry. He landed right in the middle and bounced many times before finally coming to rest. It looked kind of fun. Well, a lot of fun, actually. I helped Terry out of the marshmallow pile and dusted him off.
"That was the best fun ever,"
he said with a big grin.
"You should try it."
"I would," I said. "But we've got a book to write, remember?"
"Oh, yeah," said Terry. "I forgot."
We rode the elevator back up to the main deck. This was really it. No more distractions, no more excuses, no more flying cats, giant banana attacks, barking dogs, pretend mermaids, evil sea monsters, popcorn parties, lemonade guzzling, burp gas-filled bubblegum bubbles or marshmallow trampolines. We were just going to do our book. We sat down at the table. "So, where are we up to?" I said.
"Once upon a time, I think,"
said Terry. "Very funny," I said. "Now let me see. Once upon a time, there was a..."
"What?" "Finger,"
said Terry.
"Finger?"
I said.
"Yes,"
said Terry.
"Why don't we put your beginning and my drawing together? You know, like, once upon a time, there was a finger.
But let's not make it an ordinary finger. Let's make it a super finger. Like this.
That's crazy, I said.
Oh, said Terry, looking disappointed.
So crazy, it might just work, I added.
Then what are we waiting for? Said Terry, beaming. Let's do it!
So there we were. Me writing, Terry drawing. It was turning out pretty good too, as you can hear.
Chapter 9.
The Adventures of Superfinger! Once upon a time, there was a finger. But it was no ordinary finger. It was a Superfinger!
Superfinger is my name. Solving problems requiring finger-based solutions is my game.
What's that in the sky?
Is it a rude finger?
Is it a thumb?
No, it's Superfinger!
Superfinger helped the helpless.
Drat! I'll never get this package tied. If only I had an extra finger. I'll help you solve this knotty problem.
Thanks, Superfinger. Superfinger helped the lost.
It's no use. We'll never find our way out. We're too lost.
The exit is this way.
Thanks for pointing us in the right direction, Superfinger.
Superfinger even helped those whose nostrils were blocked.
If only my finger was a bit longer, I would be able to get this annoying obstruction out of my nose.
Meow, meow.
Don't worry, I'll have you breathing freely in no time. Oh, thanks, Superfinger.
Everybody loved Superfinger. At the world's favourite superhero awards, he was crowned number one.
Yes, sir, it's Superfinger coming in first, followed closely by Pinky, Superfinger's faithful sidekick, and in third place, Spleen Boy.
We love you, Superfinger.
We love you too, Pinky.
One day, Superfinger was out looking for new problems requiring finger-based solutions when he heard an outdoor rock concert.
Pretty loud concert. I'd better go down and see if anyone needs their ears blocked.
Flying in for a closer look, Superfinger could see that on stage was his favourite guitarist, Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, great. I love Jimi Hendrix. His hands have got the superest fingers of all.
But as he watched, Superfinger noticed that Jimi was in trouble. He started a guitar solo that was so epic, he didn't have enough fingers to play it.
If only I had an extra finger, I could really kick this epic guitar solo into overdrive.
This looks like a job for Superfinger! Superfinger flew onto the stage and launched himself headfirst at the fretboard of Jimmy's guitar.
There you go, Jimmy. I think these are the notes you were searching for.
Thanks, Superfinger. It's an honor to play with you.
The crowd went wild.
Go, Jimmy!
Go, Jimmy!
Go, Superfinger!
Go, Superfinger!
Go, Jimmy! Get on, you Superfinger!
Go wild!
And that's what we're doing. We're going wild. Oh, sorry.
Superfinger and Jimmy ended up jamming for the rest of the day and well into the night. And everybody agreed it was the best concert ever in the history of the entire world. Even Superfinger's faithful sidekick, Pinky, joined in on tambourine.
You rock, Superfinger!
Done you, Jimmy!
You too, Pinky!
Go, good on you guys! We love you! Go, Superfinger!
Rock on, Superfinger!
Jimmy and Superfinger, rock on, rock on, rock on!
Thank you.
Chapter 10, The 13-Story Monkey House.
Well, what do you think? I said.
It's great, said Terry. It's the best story we've done all year.
It's the only story we've done all year, I reminded him. Come on, let's write the next one. We're just about to get started when the doorbell rang.
Hey, Terry!
Called Bill.
Got another package for you.
Oh, great, said Terry. It must be my replacement sea monkeys.
Replacements? I said.
Yeah, said Terry. I rang the sea monkey company and told them what happened. They said they'd send some more eggs. They were very sorry.
They were sorry, I said. You'll be the one who's sorry if you get another sea monster. But Terry wasn't listening to me. He was already on his way to the front door. I waited for a while, but Terry didn't return. I figured he must have gone straight to the lab to make his new sea monkeys. So I went down to see, and sure enough, there he was.
I've done it,
he said, holding a jar up to the light.
These are definitely sea monkeys.
Congratulations, I said. Are you happy now? Terry shrugged.
Nah, well, not really, he said. Sea monkeys aren't that interesting after all.
Never mind, I said. Let's get back to work. Soon we were back at our table, about to start work on the next story, when we heard a loud crash.
What was that?
Said Terry. I don't know, I said. But it sounds like it came from the lab. We both jumped up and rushed to the elevator. As the doors to the laboratory slid open, we were greeted with a scene of total chaos. There were monkeys everywhere, and they were wrecking everything. They were swinging and leaping and chasing each other all over the laboratory. The noise was deafening.
Oh no, said Terry. I hope my sea monkeys are all right.
They are your sea monkeys, I yelled, pointing to the empty jar on the floor. Except they're not sea monkeys, they're monkey monkeys. That stupid company has sent you the wrong sort of eggs again.
But I hate monkeys, said Terry.
Not as much as I do, I said.
They're getting into the elevator, said Terry.
Oh, great, I said. Now they're going to wreck the rest of the treehouse. We watched helplessly as the doors closed and the elevator rose through the trunk back to the main level. In the time it took for the elevator to come down again and take us back up, the monkeys had created complete havoc on every single story of the treehouse. There were monkeys in the bowling alley. There were monkeys in the bathroom. There were monkeys in the swimming pool. There were monkeys in the kitchen. There were monkeys on the observation deck. There were monkeys everywhere. Watch out! I shouted. A bunch of monkeys were riding the marshmallow machine straight at us and firing marshmallows at our heads. At the same time, another bunch of monkeys were swinging towards us on a vine. Duck! I yelled. We bobbed down. The monkeys on the vine collided with the monkeys on the marshmallow machine. Monkeys and marshmallows and bits of the marshmallow machine went flying in all directions. But the collision didn't seem to bother them a bit. They picked themselves up and began pelting us with anything they could get their dirty little monkey paws on.
What are we going to do, Andy?
Said Terry. Definitely not order any more sea monkeys, I said.
Yeah, but before that, said Terry.
Whack them with the giant banana? I suggested. It's just there.
I pointed to where it was lying on the floor near Terry.
But you said two wrongs don't make a right, said Terry.
They do when there are monkeys involved, I said. Terry picked up the giant banana and, holding it like a baseball bat, began whacking back the marshmallows, pens, pencils, erasers, paintbrushes, paints and monkey poop being hurled in our direction. And then he began knocking the monkeys right out of the tree.
Ow! 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 Ow!
Take that!
But then, the strangest thing happened. As fast as Terry could knock the monkeys out of the tree, they climbed back up again. But not to continue their crazy rampage. It was simply to sit and watch him. Or, more to the point, to watch the giant banana. As Terry swung, more and more monkeys came to sit quietly in front of him.
Why are they just sitting there? Said Terry.
They seem to really like the banana, I said. Just keep waving it slowly back and forth. I think you're hypnotizing them. Sure enough, Terry soon had the entire gang of monkeys under the spell of the giant banana.
Ooh, what do I do now?
He said. Lead them up to the top of the tree, I said, and put them in the giant catapult.
Of course, said Terry. Why didn't I think of that?
You did, actually, I reminded him. Terry had originally designed the catapult as a garbage disposal unit, but we had to stop using it for that because we got too many complaints from our neighbours. Why we had to stop using our catapult as a rubbish disposal unit.
Right now, Andy, put the rubbish in. Right, Terry, shove the bag in there. Okay, and pull it back. Let it rip.
Ow!
Oh, sorry about that, Mrs. Watson.
For a while, we used it to play tricks on each other. Terry's asleep. Sweet dreams, Terry.
Lift her up. Into the catapult. Shh, don't wake him. One, two, three.
I'm flying. I love flying dreams.
But these days, we mostly use it for getting rid of unwanted guests. In this case, monkeys. I followed Terry as he led the monkeys up to the top of the tree and helped him load them into the catapult.
You'd better put the giant banana on board too, I said, just in case they come back looking for it.
Done,
said Terry, strapping the banana to the mesmerised monkeys.
All right,
I said.
Prepare to launch!
The enormous arm of the catapult hurled the monkeys and the giant banana up, up, up into the air and far, far, far away. Past Ayers Rock, past the pyramids, over vast oceans, and on to a remote island where the only inhabitant was a giant ape.
We did it, said Terry.
Yes, I said. Now we can get back to finishing our book.
Chapter 11. The Giant Gorilla. But before we could get back to finishing our book, we had to clean up the mess the monkeys had made. Finally, after about 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000 years, we had everything back to normal and we were ready to start work again. I had just finished writing the words once upon another time, and Terry had just finished pointing out that I had misspelled upon again, when the table began shaking.
Quit shaking the table, I said.
I'm not shaking the table, said Terry. I thought you were shaking the table.
I'm not shaking the table, I said as the treehouse began to sway.
Quit swaying the treehouse, said Terry.
I'm not swaying the treehouse, I said. I thought you were swaying the treehouse.
It's not me, said Terry. I think it's that giant gorilla down there.
But why would a giant gorilla be shaking our tree? I said.
Beats me, said Terry. It's not like it's a banana tree.
Of course, I said. That's it. To the gorilla, it is a banana tree. A giant banana tree.
Huh?
Said Terry. Isn't it obvious? I said. The giant banana we catapulted must have landed on a distant tropical island where the giant gorilla lives. And it found the giant banana and ate it. And loved it so much that it made a boat out of the giant banana peel. And it used its giant nostrils to track the giant banana's scent all the way back here. And now it's shaking our tree in the mistaken belief that it's a giant banana tree.
It seems a little far-fetched, said Terry.
All that trouble for a banana?
A giant banana, I reminded him, with extra giant banana flavour.
Just then we heard the unmistakable roar of a giant gorilla that has travelled across the ocean in a giant banana peel boat in search of giant bananas.
Banana! Banana!
Oh, I think you could be right, said Terry. It would certainly explain why it's here, shaking our tree. What are we going to do?
Give it more giant bananas, of course, I said.
We can't, said Terry. The monkeys broke the banana enlarger.
Can't you fix it?
Maybe, but it would take too long, said Terry. They've completely pulled it apart.
Well, we've got to do something, I said. Before it shakes the treehouse to pieces.
Banana!
Roared the giant gorilla.
Banana!
There are no bananas here, shouted Terry.
Whoa, there was, but not anymore.
Banana!
Roared the gorilla in response. It's no use, I said. Apart from the word banana, I don't think it speaks English. And then, just when we thought the day couldn't get any crazier, a white stretch limousine pulled up at our front door and a chauffeur in a fancy uniform got out and rang our doorbell.
We're up here! I called down to him.
Which one of you is Terry?
He said.
Me,
said Terry.
Well, said the chauffeur. I'm very pleased to inform you that you have won first prize in the Barky the Barking Dog drawing competition with your drawing of Barky at the beach.
Wow, that is so exciting, said Terry.
What do I win? You get to meet Barky, said the chauffeur.
When? Said Terry.
Right now,
said the chauffeur, opening the back door of the limousine.
This is great, said Terry. Barky's here. Not only do I get to meet him, but he can save us and the treehouse.
And how exactly is he going to do that? I said.
By barking, of course, said Terry.
Right on cue, Barky emerged from the limo and began barking at the giant gorilla. He barked. And barked.
Bark! Bark! Bark, 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 bark.
And barked.
Bark!
And then the giant gorilla lifted up one of his gigantic feet and stomped on him.
Bark!
Mm.
We watched as the chauffeur scooped Barky up and carried him to the limo.
Do you think he's okay?
Said Terry. Well, he's still barking, I said.
Bark, 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 bark.
I didn't even really get to meet him,
sighed Terry. Meanwhile, the gorilla wasted no time in getting back to shaking the tree, only this time even harder than before.
Oh, no, said Terry. We really are in trouble. Even Barky couldn't save us. What are we going to do?
Say goodbye to the treehouse, I said, and say hello to the monkey house. Without the treehouse, we'll have nowhere to live and nowhere to write books. I hate monkeys, said Terry,
and giant gorillas.
Well, you've only got yourself to blame, I said. If you hadn't sent away for sea monkeys or fooled around with giant bananas in the first place, none of this would ever have happened. But Terry wasn't listening to me. He was looking up into the sky.
Can you hear that?
He said. You mean the sound of a giant gorilla destroying the treehouse? I said. Yep, coming through loud and clear.
No, said Terry. The sound of a flying cat.
It's Silky!
She's come back. And she's not alone.
Chapter 12. The Day Silky Saved the Day. I looked up. Terry was right. Flying cats. A whole bunch of them. 13 to be exact, with Silky in the lead. They were flying in formation, coming in low and fast, like fighter jets. Oh, great, I said. As if a giant gorilla wasn't bad enough. Now we're being attacked by a flock of flying cats.
How do you know they're attacking us?
Said Terry.
Maybe they want giant bananas too.
Cats don't eat bananas, I said. Everybody knows that. Besides, they look angry, not hungry.
Maybe it's the gorilla they're after, said Terry. Look how scared it is.
Terry had a point. The gorilla was no longer shaking the tree. It was staring at the cats, its fur bristling. It roared loudly. But if the cats were worried, they didn't show it. They were definitely taking aim at the gorilla. We braced ourselves for a 13 flying cats and one giant gorilla collision. But it never came. At the last possible moment, the cats separated into two groups, flew past the gorilla and soared up into the sky, where they reformed into a menacing circle high above us. That's when the gorilla started to climb the tree.
There are no giant bananas up here,
shouted Terry.
We already told you that.
I don't think it's after giant bananas anymore, I said. I think it's getting into a better position to fight the cats. The gorilla climbed higher. And higher.
And higher.
Until it was standing at the top of the tree. It beat its enormous chest and roared at the flying cats, which continued to attack and torment it. The cat swooped. And the gorilla swiped. Occasionally, the gorilla would strike the cats and send them crashing to the ground, but they always landed on their feet and rejoined the battle just as quickly as they'd left it. Eventually, the 13 ferocious flying cats became too much for the gorilla. It lost its grip, fell out of the tree, and crashed to the ground with a sickening thud. But the flying cats still weren't finished with the gorilla. Before it could get up, they swooped down, sunk their claws deep into its fur, and lifted it into the air. Then they carried it away.
Well, it looks like Silky and her pals saved the day, said Terry.
If I hadn't turned her into a flying cat, the treehouse would have been destroyed for sure.
I was about to point out that the only reason the treehouse was in danger in the first place was because of him, his sea monkeys, and his stupid giant banana. But at that moment, the doorbell rang.
Oh no, I said. Not more sea monkeys. Terry, how could you?
But Terry didn't answer. He was already gone. Chapter 13. The End. I raced Terry, determined to stop him from hatching another bunch of eggs that might threaten our treehouse, not to mention our lives. But it wasn't Bill the postman at the door. It was Jill. She was panting as if she'd run the whole way over.
Was that Silky I saw? She said. Flying away from your treehouse with a giant gorilla?
Yes, said Terry. I elbowed him hard. He means no, I said.
Yeah, that's right, said Terry. I mean no.
Jill frowned.
I'm sure that was Silky.
But isn't Silky white? I said. All those cats were yellow, and they were flying. Does Silky fly? You didn't mention it on your poster.
Well, she doesn't usually, said Jill. But one of those cats was Silky. I'm sure of it. I'd recognise her anywhere. And you two know something I can tell. You'd better start talking. And fast.
I'm sorry, I said. But it wasn't my fault. It was Terry. He painted Silky yellow and turned her into a canary. Well, a catnary, I guess. And then she flew away.
I'm really, really sorry.
A catnary? Said Jill slowly. Terry turned Silky into a catnary?
Yes. And like I said, I tried to stop him.
But I'm so glad you didn't, said Jill.
Huh? I said. You don't mind?
Not at all, said Jill. In fact, it's fantastic. I've been really wanting to get a canary, but I was worried that Silky would eat it. Having a flying cat is like having the best of both pets. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome, said Terry. If you'd like any of your other animals converted, you know where to bring them.
Thanks, said Jill. I'll definitely think about it. Meanwhile, I'd better get home and put out some birdseed for Silky and her new friends.
After she left, Terry clapped his hands together.
Well, that all turned out pretty well, don't you think?
I guess so, I said. Except for one small thing.
What's that?
We still haven't written our book!
There's no need to shout, Andy, said Terry. Just relax. It will all be okay.
In what sense can I possibly relax? And how can it all possibly be okay? I said. We still have no book and it's due in tomorrow. How are we ever going to think up all the stories in time, let alone write and illustrate them?
Easy, said Terry. We don't have to think anything up. We've just lived through a really interesting day. All we have to do is write it all down, draw some pictures, and we'll have our book.
You know, I'm much smarter than Terry. But sometimes I get this really weird feeling that he is actually much smarter than me.
That's a crazy idea, I said.
Oh, sighed Terry, disappointed.
So crazy, I said. It just might work.
What are we waiting for then? Said Terry. Let's get started.
And so we sat down and wrote and drew.
It's got a bowling alley,
Terry, that's my head!
Oops, sorry. A see-through swimming pool.
Help!
Who said that? A tank full of man-eating sharks.
Look out, Terry, behind you!
Shh, don't interrupt me. I'm trying to feed the sharks.
And drew and wrote.
This might be a stupid question, Terry, I said. But why are you painting that cat bright yellow?
Because I'm turning it into a canary, he said.
I started to explain to Terry that you can't turn a cat into a canary just by painting it yellow. But he said,
yes, you can. Watch this.
And he carried the dripping cat to the edge of the
deck. And wrote and drew.
Chapter 3. The Missing Cat. We watched the cat. I mean, canary. Actually, I think I mean catnary. Until it flew out of sight. Then the doorbell rang. It was Jill, our neighbour.
And drew?
We raced back upstairs. A big red nose filled the video phone screen. Uh-oh. It was Mr. Big Nose, our publisher. And he was angry.
And wrote. And
this
drew?
This episode, Barky and the Big Hole. Starring Barky the Barking Dog.
And drew.
Barky is outside and discovers a small bird.
Bark! Bark! Bark, bark! 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 Bark, bark! Bark, bark!
And drew? And rose?
Trembling as he poured the sea monkey eggs into the jar. He stirred it and held it up to the light.
I've done it! He shouted. I'm a genius! I've created life!
And wrote? And drew?
Who's the sneakiest sea monster of all? The human does not suspect a thing. He's such a stupid diggling.
And drew? And wrote?
Epic guitar solo into overdrive.
This looks like a job for Super.
Until exactly 4:45 p.m. the next day. We've done it! I yelled.
But it's 4:45, said Terry. How are we going to get it to Mr. Big Nose on time? Our deadline is 5:00. We'll never make it.
Oh, yes, we will, I said.
But how?
I don't know, I said, but we'll think of something. That's when we heard it. A jingling noise. Terry jumped up.
It's Santa Claus, he said. Quick, get the stockings, hang them up and pretend we're asleep.
But it's not Christmas Eve, I said. In fact, it's not even Christmas. We went to the edge of the deck, and this is what we saw. Jill was flying through the sky towards us in a pram drawn by Silky and the other flying cats.
Check out my flying cat sleigh,
she said as she hovered in midair beside us.
Wanna come for a ride?
We can't, I said. We're busy. We're trying to figure out how to get our book to Mr. Big Nose in the city by 5:00.
I could take you, said Jill. These flying cats are really fast. Come on, climb aboard.
And so we did.
Come on, cats, let's go. Meow, 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 meow.
Whee!
Meow, 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 meow.
Whoa, this is great!
We flew into the city, right up to Mr. Big Nose's office on the top floor of his building and pulled up next to his window.
What are you... Cats, flying cats, what are you doing here? Oh, is that the book? Oh, I see. Pass it through. Well done.
And that's how we got the book to Mr. Big Nose on time. And then he published it. And it was delivered to bookshops, libraries, digital e-reading devices, and even transferred direct into people's brains via direct-to-brain information delivery technology helmets. Direct-to-brain information delivery technology is a direct-to-brain information delivery system so technologically advanced that Terry and I haven't even invented it yet. And Belinda Audio, where Stig Weems read it and it was released as an audiobook. And then you listened to it and we all lived happily ever after. Unless, of course, your life was tragically cut short as a result of having your brain fried by one of our prototype direct-to-brain information delivery technology helmets. The end.
the 13-story treehouse, written by Andy Griffiths and read by Stig Weems.